side. Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the Sports Weekender here on Planet FM. If you're listening on 104.6 in the Auckland region or on planetaudio.org.nz, I hope you enjoy the show. Before we go any further, a big shout out to Father Ted's Original Irish Pub. They're based at 1 Wellesley Street West in the Auckland CBD, opposite the iconic Civic Theatre. They have a selection of local craft and international draft beers on tap, a good selection of bottle beers, fine wines, good spirits, great food and music Wednesday, now through to Sunday, and also, on Monday, Labor Day the 27th, they're having a bit of a party. It's their 19th year in existence as Father Ted's. And of course, I think there's someone in there. I won't mention their name, Colin. I mean, oh, geez, who's having a significant age birthday. Anyway, their number is 09-377-3142, or you can email them, fatherteds@hotmail.com. Well, why don't we start it off? Bit of rugby and a big week, All Black squad names. Then we've had an announcement about the tour to South Africa next year. Here to join us, former All Black AJ Whitten. Good morning to you, mate.
Yeah, good morning. And, I look forward to that invite to Father Ted's to have a celebratory drink or two. Nice place it is. So, yeah, I'll pop down and share in their birthday celebrations, mate.
Yeah. I'll let you know on Labor Day. You get a pass out by Mrs. Whitten. You can tell Mrs. Whitten you're with me because she thinks I'm a nice person. So, yeah. One of the very few of your friends that does, actually. But, yeah, but
she says, I've got to support those people that are challenged. So,
Okay, so, yeah, well, it's a minute this time into the show. Anyway, All Black squad name, nothing really changed. There's no real surprise. One new cap, Matalifo, but that's about it. He was already in the squad. So, yeah, not much to really talk about there.
No, I think we possibly with the All Black 15 going as well, that just sort of took a wee bit of excitement, I guess, out of it, because there was a couple of players we're talking about, especially from Otago, obviously Boyd Pledger and even the boy Casey, I think everyone's put a mark on him as certainly a future possibly All Black going down the track. But no surprises. As I say, they've got a big squad these days, so if you're in that 36, 38, I think you've really got to do something drastic to get yourself out. But as you say, there were no really lovely lollies in there really to have a conversation about, no, to be honest.
Anyway, but the big news was it was announced, the tour to South Africa. Now, I hope if any travel agents are looking to, you know, take a tour to South Africa next year, we have a very, not a bad broadcaster, and quite a legend All Black. And it's not Richie McCaw, but we're willing, if you pay our flights and accommodation to lead the tour group, we're available. Get hold of us at the station here.
I've actually done, I did a bit of that for about 10 years when you leave the ranks and bits and pieces, and I did take a tour in 95, the first one back to Africa. And I must tell you, it was one of the best tours, regardless being a player, but as a supporter leading it, one of the best tours I've been on. The hospitality was absolutely superb. The people could not do enough for you. And I would advise people who've never been to South Africa to go and support their national team. It'll be a tour not to miss. Yeah, and it starts in August. So, it's a brilliant place, Biggie. I recommend it.
Absolutely. But, yeah, we've got four tests, four midweek matches. Mm-hmm. A proper tour, AJ, a proper tour.
Yep, that's what you like too, and to give these guys a taste of going out to the other provinces, you know, playing the Sharks, the Bulls, the Lions, which are in Joburg, and of course Western Province. They get to see other cities and to experience a bit of a culture and get to know the people, which is really what it comes down to. You know, go out and experience things that they probably wouldn't get an opportunity on a normal tour, just jumping into the Twickenham and buggering off to Millennium Stadium, Wales, etc. So, yeah, it's about be good for the 6 weeks, maybe 7 week tour, and it'll be great for the people that are selected on it. It'll be a tour of a lifetime, put it that way.
Absolutely, and I have to say, you know, I look forward to it. I think it's great we're bringing the tours back.
I look forward being there.
As tour leaders, obviously I'll do the day because I'll probably, you know, if I get, I probably have to do the show from South Africa, and probably we've got to be careful of these vineyards, the South African wines, but you can do the nights. Well, even then, we'll have to find someone to do the nights, somebody that's pretty good.
I'll tell you what, you could be the mascot. We'll put you in front of the bus or outside on the bus and tell you
off. Yeah, thanks a lot. Yeah. Anyway, more serious stuff. NBC, Otago 41, Bay of Plenty 17. I have to say, this Otago side's a good side. I looked at it. Lucas Casey, brilliant. Christian Leo-Willie, I felt, had a fantastic match. But you got that Pledger-Miller combination, Nariki, who I think's had a fantastic NPC.
Right, they've done, and I think this is why you've seen them in the final, especially that start. Yes, it was a bit of a hiss and all from both, and I think Bay of Plenty in the lead early on. Forbes scored a really good try there too, but it just showed you the cohesion, the belief in the side when they're under a bit of pressure. Their tackling, their defence was pretty sound, and they had to do some tackling. It wasn't all one-way traffic for that first 30, 40 minutes, but boy, when they got it right, they looked classy. And you mentioned Nariki, and Nariki, he's had a very, very good season. You got Gilbert at the back, solid. Miller running the cutter well, Pledger you've mentioned. But Leo-Willie, boy, he was the catalyst, the man off the back of the scrum, gained too many metres for Bay of Plenty, and he put them on the advantage, and they used that quick ruck ball very, very well. Tucker playing his 50th, I think the skipper led from the front, and when you've got some reserves that come off, and Coltman and Lopez, the big fat boys up front, and this boy Finn Hurley sadly went off injured, but boy has he got some wheels and scored a cracker of a try. Just an all round team that seems to be working really well in all positions, and they're in the final, and my word, whoever is in the final, Canterbury or Hawke's Bay, it's going to be a cracker. They're going to have to work hard for it to beat Otago.
Absolutely. Well, Canterbury, Hawke's Bay. Ooh, I think this one is a close one to call. Many would say now, obviously, the biggest news overshadowing the match is it's played the same time as the cricket in Christchurch.
I tell you, I'll be certainly watching this. I mean, the NPC competition, the Bunnings Cup, has been absolutely brilliant this season. And it was mentioned it before. We don't know, you know, you can't categorically say this team's going to win over this one. And that's what's made it appealing. And the rugby's been great too. And we've popped up a couple of great names for the future. So at home, Canterbury, you'd expect them to go out as favourites. I'm pretty sure they are on the TAB. But a team like Hawke's Bay, been there, done that, they've got those gnarly old heads they keep mentioning week in, week out, and Flanders, McClutchy, and Takatava. This will be another cracker. And if a team's going to beat them in a semi-final, it wouldn't surprise me if it's Hawke's Bay. So watch out and strap yourself in. She's going to be another humdinger.
Yeah, I suspect Hawke's Bay's got a lot of experience, but both sides have experience. And, of course, obviously it's on the same time, so there won't be a big crowd at Apollo Project Stadiums. And to be honest with you, Canterburyans have just turned into Aucklanders. Nobody goes to the games. By the way, please, I won't be welcome back in Christchurch after that comment.
I tell you what, they had nearly 12,000 in Dunedin. Doesn't that show you something about the rugby? I mean, that's a fantastic crowd there for an NPC match. So well done to them. Well done to them for supporting their team.
Absolutely. Then we go on to the Heartland. And, of course, a couple of big matches. Obviously, the first starting up with the Lahore Cup, North Otago versus Horowhenua Kapiti.
Yeah, no, that's a good... I mean, isn't it great to see they've got their big day in the sun? What, you know, Mid-Canterbury, they're unbeaten this season, Peggy, just on
Mid-Canterbury, Thames Valley, that starts this afternoon. That'll be a big crowd. Apparently, they're expecting 5,000 or 6,000 in Ashburton.
Well, you would. It's their community. It's their big social gathering. They support the team. They're unbeaten, on my memory. Just straight past the Wairarapa. It was a close one, but Thames Valley, they're going to have a lot to do on their plate if they're going to beat Mid-Canterbury at home.
Absolutely, and I think North Otago, Horowhenua and Oamaru, that should be fantastic, and they're going to get big crowds. This is the thing about Heartland Rugby, you know. We look at small crowds in the Auckland region, take for instance Eden Park, North Harbour Stadium, you know, even in Pukekohe they don't get the bigger crowds there, but we go to places where they love rugby. Rugby means something to their community. This is the thing. I really challenge someone from New Zealand rugby, maybe go down and be part of this, part of the atmosphere down there. In fact, at one point, if we ever do get a chance, I hope at one point that us two can go down there and maybe do a show from, say, a smaller area, maybe the West Coast.
Fantastic. Oh, look, I tell you, as you say, the hospitality of the people are so generous, and there's a real passion for the game. As I've said, the communities are based around the rugby, the clubs, the social life, so it's a very huge part of their daily lives down there, and they love it. And I think it's at the Mahino Rugby Club where they're holding the final. Now, not many people would know where that is, but I assure you, as you said, there'll be 4,000 to 5,000 people out there playing Horowhenua Kapiti, another really proud province. So that's their big championship. It'll be just as big as the NPC final, whether it's Canterbury Hawke's Bay versus Otago. So look, it's just great, and I just applaud them because it'll be a huge day, and good luck to both teams.
Yeah, and I would say that if it is an NPC final, you know, many would say that if you want a decent crowd there, you probably will be cheering for Hawke's Bay tonight, because you know, sadly, and I have to say, and it's Otago's really got the crowds there because of the style of rugby and because they're winning. The crowds are coming back. The students are going down a Forsyth Bar. But in the bigger centres, and I might as well get into this right now, we struggle. We struggle on Auckland, in the Auckland region. Hamilton, they really struggled to get people there. Wellington, they would go to Porirua Park. They still don't get a lot there. Christchurch, Canterbury, they're playing at Apollo Project Stadiums. I remember speaking to Brian Ashby, and I said, wouldn't it have been better to move it to a smaller venue like
yeah,
Rugby Park?
There's a lot more things that go with that. I mean, obviously, the bigger centres, there's a lot more going on in the community.
Yeah.
You've got other professional teams, especially in Auckland, that challenge it. And if your product is not winning, it just gives you another excuse, and I use that word excuse to say, well, you know, I'll go and do something else or not bother. I'll watch it on the telly, which people are. It's just trying to get those bums back on seat, and sadly, when you go to a huge stadium, you know, it looks like you're at a cemetery. So there's a lot of challenges to get people back out there to support the game. I don't know what the answers are, but get your product right. Give them an experience like they do, and I'll mention the AFC football. And if you've got the product and you've got all the amenities and the things that attract families to get them along, they'll come. We just got to get our heads out of the sand and see how we can promote the game better.
Yeah, well, I was just a side note, just to let you know our old friend Sean Summerfield, who you went on tour with to France in 2007 with XTV3. Yes. He was telling me that he has given up his tickets, his season tickets for Eden Park, because he used to take his girls along. He said they're more interested in going to the Warriors and Auckland FC. And he said that's the battle.
Well, as I said, I've got some work to do. But, you know, as I said, it's, the rugby is my first passion. I just wanted to get back to the some sort of where people are talking about it in a positive way rather than negative.
Absolutely, AJ. And talking about another passion of yours, socialising. Now, what have you been doing this week? And happy, and I believe happy birthday to our old mate Fenton Little. I hope.
Yes, this is Fenton Little, and she had a bit of a few drinks. Looking forward to catching up with her this weekend or early next week. She's a busy lady, and with Nick and with Pudding, Tigger, Birdie May will be there. Marlo, maybe Balu, the Bald Eagle may come along too.
So, oh, Balu, the you mean the Boring Eagle?
They're all the same.
Yeah. What about what about the part timer who works for them? That other mob in Parnell.
Well, Kyle Mills will be busy. He's got cricket this weekend.
Yeah,
and of course, next week they're in town at Eden Park. So, no, there's a lot going on. And sport, yeah, more sport the better as far as I'm concerned to get us out and go support teams.
Yep. Yeah, well, I am looking forward to this weekend of rugby, and obviously next weekend, the long weekend. I'm really looking forward to a great weekend of sports.
Okay, we do too, mate. I look forward to catching up with you and supporting those that are absence of height. So that's what I'll do.
Who are you talking about? you have a great day, AJ.
Thank you, buddy.
Cheers. AJ Wheaton, always putting a shot in just to give me a bit of a reality check, as he always does on a Saturday morning. Well, I'm just going to play a bit of music and just set up an interview, which I done yesterday. Now, before anyone says, you know, the netball has already been played, I done a quick preview of this netball consolation match number one with Kate Wells from One New Sports, who's a netball correspondent. Now, so this is purely just some of what has her views on that before. This was yesterday before the big game. So let's play a bit of music, and it won't be too long.
Hey, brother, there's an endless road to rediscover. Hey, sister.
Welcome back to the Sports Weekend. As said, I will play this interview with Kate Wells from One News.
Welcome everyone back to the Sports Weekend here on Planet FM, and it's a great pleasure to have Kate Wells from One New Sports. And as we talk about this Consolation Cup, well, we finally get to talk about on the court instead of off the court at the moment, Kate, because it's been a huge week for New Zealand netballs. Gail Parata resigning, but now we can concentrate on the netball.
Yeah, I mean, it is good in that sense, but I think a lot of that off-court noise has followed them to Australia. There's obviously, you mentioned Gail Parata resigning. Grace Weekes come out saying that she still supports Nolene, and reflecting on that post-match speech, I think they still may get some tough questions from Australian journalists over there, but Australia have also been through their fair share of ups and downs within their organisation, so I think they understand what it's like, which could be nice for the Ferns to relate to. But yeah, it is good to finally get the on-court netball, the stuff that we all enjoy watching.
Well, I think the on-court netball, and of course, you know, like obviously the Silver Ferns have come in after the first two were very convincing against South Africa. The third one they have to really work for, but this one, it is a great rivalry of New Zealand netball, New Zealand Australia, and New Zealand go in as the defending champions, Kate. But do you think, looking at this, do you believe that the seven they put out there will be enough to beat Australia, because you have probably the best shooter in the world in Grace Nawicki?
Yeah, I think you have to have... I think that New Zealand does have a really good seven that could beat Australia, but whether they can go the full 60 with that seven, I think, is the question.
Yeah.
For New Zealand to beat Australia, that worked really well for them last year, is having as minimal changes as possible, because it kind of stops those ebbs and flows when changes are made. But I definitely think they've got a really strong seven. I'm really intrigued to see how Peter Toiava goes, because we haven't seen her play against Australia for a couple of years. I believe it was 2022 or 2023. They could not shut her down. So I think that will be a real challenge for them. And we saw in the Constellation Cup last year that Australian star goal attack Kira Austin, she could not shoot over the arms of Kelly Jackson. And they have gone with Kira Austin for their 12 for the first game. So I think there's going to be some really exciting matchups. And for Australia, they haven't seen Peter Toiava play on the international stage for a while, so they're probably thinking of all the ways to shut her down.
For Yvette McCauley-Drury, if she was to win it or even tie it, it would be quite bittersweet, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it would. I mean, she's a high-performing coach. She goes out there to win. So a draw, even though it goes back on goals and points and whatnot, I think that would be a great achievement given the kind of turmoil that she's come into. But a win would just be excellent. I wonder if even if they won, she would put her hat in the ring for the main job if it got to that point, which I think it's probably looking like it.
Yeah.
But she's competitive. She's not going there just to say, oh, you know, you're doing well. She's a high-performance coach. She'll want to win.
So when we look at it, and probably moving on to the, obviously it's one game at a time for the Ferns, but when we look at the future of New Zealand netball, and when we look at Dame Nolene and everything that's been happening in the past few months, it's looking like the situation, there is going to be a parting of the ways between New Zealand netball and Dame Nolene Tarua.
I don't know that for sure, but I think the fact that Dame Nolene hasn't been reinstated for the Consolation Cup, I think that says it all. And they've had these long sessions of mediation that has been no resolution. I think that's only pointing to one thing. Which is really sad. You know, the people in New Zealand and Dame Nolene have had some great times together. They've achieved a lot, and for that to end sour, it's pretty tough to deal with for both parties.
Oh yeah, it is going to be tough, but when we look for it, it should be a good series. Can New Zealand win this series, Kate? Just from your perspectives, can they forget about all the off-court distractions and win this series?
Of course they can. I probably was media to say that they wouldn't win the Consolation Cup. They'd lost the Tiny Jamieson Trophy to England, and they didn't look in sync on court. There was a lot of timing issues and some visible frustration. And then they went off and won 3-1, and they were very dominant in those three games. So I had to eat my words a little bit last year. So I think there's, you know, it's anyone's game, and I think the Ferns could definitely win. They will have to be clinical and not let Australia's physicality get to them. One thing Amelia Walmsley mentioned was that in last year's Consolation Cup, the Silver Ferns had a mental edge, which they utilised, and they didn't let Australia get on top of them. Because that's the thing with Australia, if they get a 5-point buffer, it's likely to grow, and they're likely to punish you. So if you just keep chipping away at things and don't let the score go out too far, I think they're in with a great chance.
Absolutely. Well, Kate, I will be looking forward to it. And as we say, there is a lot of sports across the weekend to watch, but I think a lot of New Zealanders will be keeping an eye on this more than ever, because maybe in many ways the off-court dramas has put more eyes on this Consolation Cup.
I think it definitely has, and I've seen a lot of comments on social media saying people aren't going to support the Silver Ferns given what's happened, and I think if there's anything, this is a time when you want fans to get behind the team, because these players, obviously some have been directly involved with complaints and whatnot, but they've got to do their job with all of this noise going on. So I think if people get behind them and get behind the sport, I think that's a good thing. I mean, more eyes on people, the better.
Absolutely. Well, we'll leave it there, Kate. You have a wonderful weekend, and hopefully we can catch up soon talking about a Consolation Cup victory for the Silver Ferns.
Absolutely. Thank you very much.
Cheers.
And that was Kate Wells from One News. And as you're all aware, a win for Australia last night in the Consolation Cup. So, yeah, I may have not got the timing right, but it's sometimes hard to just get someone to talk about it. And Kate's very busy, and she's a fantastic broadcast journalist, as Kate. I have a lot of time for her. Always, when she's free, she's always willing to give her time to the show. So a big thanks to Kate Wells. Well, we might as well... Now, I'm going to try and see if I can get Joey Green a bit earlier, because we've got a bit of a busy show today. So I will play a bit of music, and hopefully I can just have a quick chat to Joey Green from Auckland Rugby League as we preview the big, 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 big weekend in Rugby League.
Great clouds roll over the hills, bringing darkness from above. if you close your eyes. Does it almost feel like nothing changed at all? And if you close your eyes, does it almost feel like you've been here before? How am I going to be an optimist about this? How am I going to be an optimist about this? Do we begin the rubble or our sins? Oh, oh,
where do we begin the rubble or our sins?
And the walls kept tumbling down in the city that we love. Great clouds roll over the hills, bringing darkness from us. But if you close your eyes, does it almost feel like nothing changed at all? And if you close your eyes, does it almost feel like you've been here before? Oh, how I'm beginning to be an optimist about this. How I'm beginning to be an optimist about this. If you close your eyes, does it almost feel like nothing changed at all?
Welcome everyone back to the Sports Weekend. We're having some issues raising Joey Green from Auckland Rugby League. Now the message was sent out, and by everything last week, he didn't tell unless he is away, but his phone is off. So I'm going to keep on trying. I might try someone else just to come in to give us 10 minutes. So if you can be patient with me, and we hopefully can get someone else on the line to have a chat. Okay, everyone, sorry about this. Looks like Joey Green is unavailable. We've tried all our numbers, so, hey, there's not much I can do. But apart from just have a chat about the upcoming Pacific Cups, and I have to say, I'm going to look at these two sides, and it's fantastic to see. I'm just going to bring up the teams for round one. So this is 6:05 Sunday, Go Media Stadium. This will be a fantastic match. Let's have a look at the two. Let's have a look at the back lines. So you have a look at it. The Kiwis have Chance, Nicol Kotsep, Jermaine Asako, Matt Tomoko, Casey McLean, Ronaldo Mulitalo, Dylan Brown, and Kieran Foran. Well, when we look at the Tua Samoa side, Roger Tuivasa-Sheck, Brian Teal, Isaac Tongo, Dean Mariner. Now, Dean Mariner, probably lucky to be there if Stephen Crichton had been available. Murray Tulangi, who plays for Blaze Tulangi. And, of course, Jerome Luai. Now, there is a lot. When you look at both back lines, obviously, big match for Kieran Foran, you know. But we look at it like Casey McLean. He has been superb for the Panthers this year. We also have a look at Ronaldo Mulitalo. He had a good run. He's had a great season with the Sharks, and of course Jermaine Asako, who was the top point scorer in the NRL. We also have a quick look at the Tua Samoa. So obviously Roger Tuivasa-Sheck, Brian Tau, who has been fantastic, State of Origin experience, as has Murray Talangi. And then of course Jerome Luai has moved to the Tigers. He has really, I believe the Tigers will be a more competitive side, and I think he holds the catalyst for tomorrow for any chance in that back line. We look at this pack and wow, what a good Samoan pack. Josh Papalihi, Payne Haas, wow, Dally M winner, Jeremiah Nanai, we have Jaden Sua, Junior Polo. These guys have all played some sort of State of Origin football. Jess Tavanga, who was a former Warriors. We look at the Kiwi side, obviously James Fisher-Harris, the captain, and of course he combines with his former Penrith Panthers teammate Mossy Leota. They'll provide a lot of go forward. Jeremy Marshall-King will provide a lot of good runs from dummy half. We also have a look at the second row. Britton Nakora has probably been one of the better second rowers in the competition. Isaiah Papalihi has really come back into form since joining the Panthers, and Joe Tapani, well, there's no better person. We look at the interchange bench, and Aaron Clark, well-deserved, had a great season for the Warriors. Felix Crossland covers that halves and hooker region. Nathaniel White, fantastic. And, of course, the big surprise for me was Nelson Afoa-Solomona. Now, he has been suspended, so he'll have a lot to prove. Chanel Harris-Tavita on the bench could provide that catalyst. Tyrell May, huge. I look at this. This one is a close one to call. I'm actually going to pick a Kiwis victory, not by much, but it wouldn't surprise me if Tua Samoa was to win that. Also, not forgetting the Kiwi Ferns. You know, they have a big match against Fetu Samoa, and I think that'll be a fantastic match. And I think, you know, the Kiwi Ferns, a lot of players made the Dally M side, a lot of players from the Warriors, but a very, very good side. Also in Pacific Cup, we have the Pacific Bowl, Fiji versus the Cook Islands. It is, you know, it's a fantastic week of rugby league and around the motto, as they say. And I think, you know, next week, the big one at Eden Park, the Kiwis versus Tonga. That should be huge. Well, I just want to thank Douglas Drainage, and a big thanks for them for sponsoring this part. Sorry I couldn't raise Joey. I might try him one more time. But as we say, the show must go on, move on. So, but a big thanks to Douglas Drainage. every problem has a solution. All solutions have a cost. Minimise the cost with information and technology. Provided information with technology and research, that's what Douglas Drainage do. Their number is 027 483 8373. So yeah, okay. So, so we're ahead of the game, to be honest with you. So it was probably a good idea to bring in the week that was. I had an interview with Zion Dale from One News, and a very good interview. So yes, so I will get to that right now. So here was the week that was.
Welcome everyone back to the Sports Weekend here on Planet FM. Before we go any further to our next guest, big shout out to Force Electrical. Force Electrical, they were established in 2014 and have grown to be a trusted name in the electrical industry. Why you should choose them? Reliable and knowledge that sets them apart. What they do? They can do anything from residential to commercial projects. Ongoing electrical maintenance, solar panel systems with inverter and battery storage and ELV solutions. So, give Force Electrical a call. Their number is 021-628-341, or you can email nick@forceelectrical.co.nz. Well, we're moving on to the week that was, and he's a regular on the show, and he's about the only journalist that hasn't blocked my number yet. Please welcome from One News Sport, Zion Dale. Good morning to you.
Good morning, mate. Good to talk to you. How are you?
Yeah, good, 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 good. I saw a funny video of you when I think when the Euros were on, where you were celebrating with a whole lot of English fans. I had a wee laugh, chuckle at that one.
Yeah, that was a few haircuts ago. I think I was about, probably would have been 21, 22 when I was doing that. But those days have passed me. I'm a serious sports journalist now. trying to be.
Yeah, wow. Hey, let's start it off the week that was. Starting Sunday, Bathurst, Matt Payne, what a race. What
incredible.
Yeah, brilliant.
Absolutely incredible. I was watching that. The last five laps, especially at the top of the hill there, you couldn't see a thing. And I actually heard a commentator say that if the stewards can't see point to point, or they can't see each other, they actually have to abandon the race. And, you know, it's sort of, it goes on, and Matt Payne would have won it at that time, because I seriously thought that was going to happen. Jeez, what a race it was. I think I was on Sunday reading the news, and we had Brian Wood in there, and he was leading, and he was leading right through our sports bulletin, and I came off here, and then I saw he had a bit of a technicality, and the race didn't work out for him. But then to see Matt Payne go through, honestly, the final five laps, that's what motorsport's all about. Absolutely incredible race, and what a result for Matt Payne.
Absolutely, and of course, you can win a championship, but as my old mate Sean Summerfield always said, you win Bathurst, you're a legend. And he is follows that great tradition of Kiwi drivers that have won Bathurst.
100%, and in the way that he did it, to I think 18th at one point to go on and win the race, I think it just shows, it's the Bathurst 1000 for a reason, and no one is out of contention. And I think just the way he drove and the way he handled those conditions, because not only the road being wet, but the visibility at the top of the hill when you're driving those speeds, absolutely phenomenal. A great display and a victory that we savoured for quite a while.
Absolutely. And of course, then we go during the week, and this was on Tuesday morning. The All Whites won, Norway won, and I will say this right now, while Norway were minus Ernan Haaland, minus Onegaard, they were still a very, very good side. And I think that's a great result. And if you want to talk about people putting their body on the line for the country, no more than Finn Sermon when he scored that goal.
I know, one ball went into the goal, two went into the post. Fantastic. Fantastic goal. And I think, I look at this All Whites performance, and especially I think going into this Norway game, this All Whites team is past the point of scraping a win you know, holding on and being lucky for that goal. They actually can compete, and I saw some great signs, especially against Poland as well. I mean, the goal that they scored was a good one. You know, it's hard to save off the crossbar and into the goal, but the All Whites passed the point now of being that scrappy team that just flukes a win. They actually can compete, and I mean, I think, you know, before the World Cup, I think there's still a few spots in my mind in the team that I envisage that are still up for grabs. But I mean, you mentioned Finn Sermon scoring that goal, just right place, right time. But geez, he is the pillar at the back. He is the form centre back at the moment, playing some incredible football. Just a guy that you know is solid. And I really do rate Tyler Bindon as well. Probably didn't have the greatest matches against Australia. But I mean, add him into the mix. Maybe on the left, and you've got Kakashi to come back. But look, I just think this team is building really nicely. I think we're starting to see the benefits of pretty much the whole team playing some very high level football around the world, and you know, it's showing with the result, you know, against Norway, that's a draw. I think that is deserved. I think the way that the All Whites are going at the moment, it's, you know, they look very, very good. I go back to those Australia games, and just like, you know, you've got a 2-week international break where our pretty much the whole squad minus the A-League players have to travel around the whole world to play, and that has to have a toll. But I think, you know, it just shows a lot of the players that are based in Europe, they have a shorter, you know, travel period to go and play. And I think that was a performance that was deserved. You know, just what I've seen from the All Whites over the past year or so. And like I said before, we're starting to see the benefits of them playing, a lot of those players playing some very high-level football.
Absolutely. And of course, also, during, of course, Michael Boxer, we can't forget him, the old man at the back.
And honestly, I mean, I did a yarn with him when they were in New Zealand. I forget his age, probably closer to 40 than it is 30. But, you know, for me, going into this World Cup, especially the two centre-backs, they keep that formation. It is Michael Boxall and Finn Sermon for me.
Absolutely. Hey, just during the week, obviously, the White Ferns beat Bangladesh, and they had a rain-affected match against Sri Lanka. It was a 250. They were chasing 259. It might have been a tough call, but for the White Ferns, this they've got a do or die match against Pakistan.
I mean, I think every game from here on out, you know, they've got India and Australia after that. Two pretty poor performances to start the campaign that really put them on the back foot, and then come right, you know, and I mean that Sri Lanka result, you know, you can't do much about the weather, and a win there would have certainly propelled them and got them back within the hunt of that top four. But look, you mentioned do or die. I think every match for them is do or die. And I mean, if they can match it with India and Australia, you know, there's nothing to say that they can't compete with the best, because those two teams, having watched them the other night, are probably, in my mind, the two form teams at the moment. England as well, of course, but yeah. Unlucky result there that night in Sri Lanka for the White Ferns, but I mean, they really did shoot themselves in the foot against South Africa especially.
Absolutely. Of course, another big news during the week, the NRL has come out and said any player that wants to play for Rugby 360 will have a 10-year ban. Now, I think they could be pushing you know what uphill, because there is a lot of legal ramifications around the Zion, and I believe this will be tested in the courts of law.
Yeah, it's an interesting one for me, and to be perfectly honest with you, I haven't done as much research as I probably should have, and you know, I've probably seen it on face value, but it's a bit of a reach, I think. You know, like, the NRL has, you know, the history, the prestige behind it. If you're a budding rugby league player, you know, it speaks for itself. And for a 10-year ban, I mean, it just shows that, I guess, the higher powers of this league are worried. But it's, you've got to look at the guys that they're targeting, and I mean, they are very high class players. But yeah, I think it's a bit too over the top. I think, you know, there wouldn't be an exodus of players that leave the NRL to go to this competition, given what the prestige that the NRL holds. So, yeah, look, it's an interesting one for me. Do I think it's over the top? Yeah, I do. A 10-year ban? I just don't see, you know, this league coming into force. And a whole lot of these top line NRL players leaving, but yet, like you said, I've listened to a few articles as well about the legal ramifications it has, whether that holds, I'm not sure, but look, I think for me it's a bit over the top.
Yeah, absolutely. And then of course netball last night, Silver Ferns kept in touch with Australia but were blown away 24-11 in the last quarter.
Yeah.
69-52 to Australia. Obviously, people, whether the excuses come out, they were just blown away. You can't go on and blame on what's been happening with inside that camp. But it's concerning. It's going to be concerning for the next three games that Australia can do this.
Well, I'll give it to the Silver Ferns. For three quarters there, they stuck with the Aussies, and it looked like you said, just got blown out in the fourth quarter, and the scoreline probably doesn't reflect the whole game, but it's hard to ignore, you know, what is bubbling, you know, behind the scenes, and, you know, a lot of instability. You look at the coaching situation, of course, and you think, you know, the way that's going, you know, different players saying different things, speaking out, blah blah blah, you know what I mean. It's just hard to sort of put that to one side and look at the performance when you know that's bubbling in the background, and you could probably put it down to that. So look, it's, I mean, you know, for three quarters there, I thought, you know, this is either a situation that could galvanise this group and come out and do their talking on the court, but yeah, look, I mean, Australia set the benchmark for so long now. So it could be a long consolation cup series for this group, but I mean, look, it's hard to ignore everything that's going around the coaching situation at the moment and how big of a part it plays in how the Silver Ferns perform right now. And look, I honestly, for Yvette McCall's injury, I do feel sorry for her. She's inherited a situation and a team that's in turmoil at the moment, to be frank. And, you know, I think she's a great coach, but things behind the scene, it can't be easy. And for those players in the back of their minds, they know what's going on, who they want, who they don't want to play for. So, you know, it's hard to look at that result and go purely on the performance, knowing what is going on behind the scenes.
Absolutely. Wow, we look at the weekend ahead. Scheduling in sports, who would schedule the Black Caps versus England, Canterbury versus Hawke's Bay at the same time in Christchurch? Now, I suspect most Cantabrians will go along to the cricket because it's better weather, it'll be great, it's always great fun at the 2020. I look at this and New Zealand really needs a confidence booster in this 2020 series against England.
You go back to the scheduling, and I think the match tonight against England is sold out. So, you know, I mean, what does that say when, you know, there's an NPC game down the road that's on at the same time? A real pity, really, because, I mean, I think it would be fantastic, you know, if you had an afternoon footy game, you know, whether you're in Christchurch or not, to turn on the NPC cracking game last night, but, you know, turn on the NPC and then flick over to the cricket one after the other, and that, you know, then you go to bed, really. But yeah, look, I mean, the Black Caps needed, I think, you know, they were outclassed by Australia when they could play cricket. I mean, rain had a lot to say in that series, but it was a pitch made for Mitch Marsh up in Tauranga, wasn't it? But I look at this Black Caps lineup, it's very strong. I think Rachin Ravindra coming back, it just adds a bit more stability in the batting order, especially. You know, like, I mean, that Australia series, it feels odd talking about cricket, especially when we're right sort of in the midst of a rugby championship still talking about the All Blacks. But, you know, I love cricket, so, you know, I'm not complaining, don't get me wrong, but it did feel weird that, you know, so early in October we're talking about cricket.
Anyway, so obviously A-League starts this weekend, Auckland FC versus the Victory, Phoenix versus the Glory. A lot of Australian pundits are picking Auckland FC to win. I don't believe that they can win, but I've been known to heed my words before. I think the Phoenix could be a shock revelation this season. I just feel this could be a year where they could may make the playoffs.
Yep, I'm a Wellington man, so I'll definitely back you on that one. But with my journalist hat on, no, I honestly think they do need improvement. I think, you know, we've got to a point now where Giancarlo Italiano, it's time for him to show some results, or he could be facing the chop, frankly. But look, you know, Auckland FC, they've obviously the highs of last year, their first season, have to back it up. That's the challenge for them. You know, you look at the Phoenix and the season before last, you know, they were in the same position as Auckland FC, and look at the toll that had on them the next season after that. You know, the highs and I guess the emotional energy of getting that far and missing out, that's what Auckland now have to put behind them and start again. A terrific, terrific first season, sort of under no pressure whatsoever. I think, you know, the first time that they were under pressure was when they lost at home by a fair margin against Western United, but it was quickly put behind them when they kept winning winning matches and going on to win the Premier's Plate. So I'm looking forward to it. I think it's great for football in this country. You know, I think that rivalry, you know, was sparked last season and will continue this season. But no, I'm really looking forward to it, and I 100% back you that the Phoenix almost need to be the surprise package, just given what they went through last year and the poor performances that they had, and really not rising to the big occasions when they did the season before. So look, I mean, you know, I can only judge of what I've seen in training and snippets of pre-season action, but I mean, if Steve Corricker got them firing last season, and looking at who they've signed this season and who they've retained, you know, signs do point to another playoff run for Auckland, but certainly it needs to be for Wellington. Otherwise, I think the gaffer's got some serious questions to answer.
Anyway, finish off the weekend, Kiwi Furs versus Fetu Samoa, and the Kiwis versus Toa Samoa. I look at the Samoan lineup,
All-star.
And could you imagine, I'll put this to you, if Stephen Crichton had been available, if the Hammer had been available, that is a scary, scary backline.
I underestimated the Samoan team, and I'll tell you why. I was at the fan day at Mount Albert Rugby League Club the other day, and all the teams get introduced, and down, you know, the team come down the stairs and onto the stage, and I remember the Samoan team getting introduced, and I was watching these blokes come down the stairs thinking, goodness me, like, they are star-studded. They've got players that have played grand finals, Origin, Kane Haas, you know, arguably the best front row of the games we've ever seen. But then you also, you look at the Kiwis team, and I mean, you know, I look at that forward pack as well, and it's just, it'll be one up front, I think. I think the Kiwis do have the strong outside backs halves combination, but that's not to say that Samoa don't. I think it's going to be absolutely fantastic. You look at, you know, we NRL teams down to Auckland all the time, and you've got stars in that. But seriously, what we will see on Sunday, especially in that Kiwis Toa Samoa match, is just the superstars of the game. It'll be absolutely fantastic, and also for the Kiwi Ferns as well. Look at that lineup. Peyton Takimoana can't even make the main squad, and she's the Dally M winger of the year. You know, and it says a lot about where the women's game is heading as well, and especially, you know, for both the Kiwi Ferns and the Kiwis, this is their last three matches before the World Cup. So as much as it is a spectacle for both Ricky Henry and Stacey Jones, it's about getting their teams right for the World Cup. It seems odd to say being 12 months away, but this is probably the only crack at a full squad that they get before that World Cup. And you know, also, you know, I think it's worth mentioning Kieran Foran as well, as what he's given to this jersey. I spoke with Dylan Brown the other day, and I mentioned to him what it means to be playing with Kieran Foran and the memories that he had growing up. And, you know, his memories were more of Sean Johnson than it was of Kieran Foran. Now, I'm not trying to age-shame him there, you know, it just shows what this Kiwis team means to Kieran Foran. So, look, I think superstars all over the park, you know, over the next 3 weeks between Tonga, the Kiwis, and Samoa. So, look, I think tomorrow afternoon is going to be terrific.
Excellent stuff, Sid. Well, you enjoy the sporting weekend, and I've got no doubts in a few weeks' time we will be catching up again.
You've got my number, Amon. You call me anytime. Great to chat sport.
Cheers, mate. Bye. Bye.
Appreciate it.
Cheers.
Yes. And that was Zion Dale from One News, and I have to say, very, very good interview. So always enjoy a chat with Zion, so he's very good. Anyway, next up, we're going to talk a bit of football with the big guy, Seamus Martin. He's back on the tools after a well-deserved holidays, so I'll play a bit of music, and we'll have, hopefully, I haven't been cursed, we'll have the big guy on the other side.
Tell your best buddy that you love him. So check it out. Where does our time
Welcome to the Sports Weekender here on Planet FM. We talk football. We talk the beautiful game. Here to join us, back from a well-deserved holiday, the big guy from Between Two Bears podcast, the great Seamus Martin. Good morning to you, young fella.
Yeah, good morning. Nice little period away. You reckon Robert Thompson's ever been down to the deep south?
Oh, Robert's been everywhere, mate. He's been everywhere, and he will actually, we better show a bit of love to you, Robert, in a platonic way, mate. So if you're looking to buy, sell, looking to get into your first home, looking to invest in the Auckland property market, he's a guy you call Robert Thompson from Buffett and Thompson. He's experienced, he's knowledgeable, and an absolute good bloke to boot. So give him a call, 021-737-949, or you can email him r.thompson@buffers.co.nz. Yeah, right. I think Robert, I know, has been down to many places in the South Island. He does go to Hamner quite a bit to catch up with a mate of his down there. So if you ever get down there, I'll give you his number to give him a call, have a round of golf with him.
And oh, it's a beautiful part of the world, isn't it?
Oh, it's just awesome. The South Island is brilliant. It's absolutely brilliant. And it's great. I'm happy that you and your family enjoyed your break. Hey, just talking about something that was really good. All Whites won, Norway won. I have to say, it was a great game by the All Whites. Even though Norway didn't have Haaland, didn't have Onegaard, but this was still a good Norwegian side. If you want to talk about anyone putting their body on the line and, you know, their whole body on the line for the country, it's got to be Finn Sermon.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of clips going around this week about the most painful goal ever scored, isn't it? So, yeah, Finn at the back post, just tucking in and giving the All Whites a lead in that first half. If I speak my truth, Eamon, the alarm went off a little bit. That was day one after being on holiday, so I missed the first half altogether. I caught the second half, which was, I thought the All Whites were unlucky not to extend the lead on a couple of occasions in that game. And, you know, obviously 1-1 is a fair result. There's no two ways about it. But, look, I think a little bit more clinical, maybe a little bit more time together on the training pitch, because, you know, these international windows are quite condensed. They could have squeaked away with, you know, a very rare win on European soil, but let's celebrate the positives, shouldn't we?
Yeah, absolutely.
It's a really good result against a side well inside the top 50 in the world. And again, you know, yes, let's celebrate, but there is a little tinge of me that thinks, goodness, we could have come away with a win here had we just been a little bit more polished. And these sort of missed opportunities, we saw it against Australia, perhaps not so much against Poland, although we were in that game for long periods of time. But against Norway with a 1-0 lead, those are the kind of games in a World Cup that you really want to shut out and shut the opposition down if you get your noses in front. So, look, lots of positives. I think I've made 4 points on my little piece of paper in front of me, one of which is the importance of Michael Boxall.
Absolutely.
I spoke about him after the Australia games. I think he wasn't playing in the home game at Go Media Stadium. They went with Tyler Bindon and Finn Sermon. But for me, Michael Boxall, he's up there with Chris Wood as a name that has to be on the starting 11 in my mind.
Well, there are three names you put on who are on the sheet. Chris Wood, Libby Kadachi, a fit, and Michael Boxall. And probably Ryan Thomas is another name you can add to that. And Marcus
Stamenage. Couldn't agree more. Great to see Woodsy bring up his 88th cap, draw level as our all-time leading appearance maker. And I've got a question for you. I've got Alex Paulson number one question mark, and I wanted to ask you that question, Eamon. Where do you stand? Do you think he's edged ahead of Max Crocombe in terms
of his
preferred goalkeeper?
I think he has, and the reason for this is because he's playing first-team football. Whether it's in the Polish top division, whereas poor old Max, he's on the bench at Millwall. Now, when Millwall's goalkeeper comes back from a suspension, he can find himself in the pecking order to number three. Don't be surprised if he's loaned out to a League One club in January.
Yeah, I tend to agree. I think Paulson has done enough now to confirm his place as the first choice goalkeeper for the All Whites. You know, good at the other end of the spectrum, or just starting out his international career. Great to see Owen Parker Price make his debut for New Zealand. He had big raps on him when he was here in New Zealand. He went overseas to Europe, just got a little bit lost in the weeds, perhaps, but showed his class. A player very similar, come through the same school as Ryan Thomas, so got those similar traits. And another one, he's a personal friend of mine, so a little bit biased here, but it was great for me to see Andre de Jong back in the all-white squad. I think he provides something a little bit different to Ben Wayne and Chris Wood up front, more of a link man, and I'd like to see more opportunities for him in the November window to try and press his claims for an all-white spot at the World Cup next year as well.
Absolutely. And then, of course, A-League starts. Auckland FC versus the Victory, the Phoenix versus the Perth Glory. I've been read all the papers. I've read all the Aussies pundits. I've read some of the New Zealand pundits, Piney and Michael Burgess, who's a friend of the show. They're picking Auckland FC. Everyone's saying they're the big favourites this year. Now, I'll be straight to the point. I don't think they will win it this season. I think because it's a second season syndrome, I have to say, you know, there's more people know the way they play. The Phoenix, on the other hand, they've kept themselves low-key. They haven't, you know, there's a lot of concern, but I think the Phoenix could push for playoffs this year.
Yeah, I've got to admit, I'm really excited to see this A-League kick off for the New Zealand teams today. Of course, it kicked off last night with two matches on Friday night over across the ditch. From a New Zealand perspective, if you get your hands on the New Zealand Herald today, there's a great piece in there you mentioned by Jason Pine and Michael Burgess, friend of the show, and they do analyse the two New Zealand teams. Look, the 2-0 result in the semi-final against tonight's opponents, Melbourne Victory, will still be fresh in the minds of a lot of the squad. They'll be up for revenge. I expect them to start really hot tonight. But I agree with you. I think, for me, the success or otherwise of this season and whether they can reach the same heights as they did last year falls on the shoulders of the new striker, Sam Cosgrove. I think if he can bang in a few goals at that pointy end and allow Guillermo Mai the opportunity just to drop in a little bit deeper where he loves to play, we've seen how deadly he can be from outside of the box. But if Mai can get on the ball in those little pockets of space, I think Auckland FC could be a chance to go one better than next year. I don't think, and this is something echoing what Piney and Burgess said, that incredible start that they had last year with six matches unbeaten on the bounce, six wins in a row, which really set their campaign alight. I think they'll find it hard to reach those same heights. And you made a really good point before about the opposition knowing what they've got to come at them. I think that relentless style that they have will still be here this season. But I just think their opponents might be a little bit more prepared for what they'll throw at them. So they might need to come up with a couple of plan Bs and plan Cs just to unlock some of the defences. Wellington Phoenix kick off tonight with a distance derby, the longest away trip in world football, all the way across in Western Australia, up against Perth, who have been really busy in the off-season. At least one former Wellington Phoenix player in Scott Wootton, who's got the captain's armband for Perth straight away, will be lining up against him. I think Sam Sutton is injured, who also went from our capital across to Perth. Brian Kaltak there, a name that's familiar to New Zealand football fans. The Vanuatu International is also at Perth. They start as red-hot favourites, and I think they'll get the job done at home against Wellington. Look, I hope it's not the same long season that Yellow Fever fans endured last year. I hope there's a little bit more joy in the capital, but I think tonight, head-to-head against Perth Glory, they definitely start as the underdogs, and I can see Perth winning that game. In terms of the Melbourne-Auckland game, maybe just a draw for those two. Maybe those two teams too close can't be separated. I'll sit on the fence for that one.
Absolutely, because later on we're going to be doing a lot of sitting on the fence when we pick our EPL. Hey, just one thing, we'll kick it off. National League Men's, Wellington Olympic versus Auckland City FC in the Med Cup. Auckland FC Reserves versus Coastal Spirits, Christchurch United versus Western Springs, Auckland United versus Phoenix Reserves, and on Sunday, Western Suburbs versus Birkenhead. Starting off with the Med Cup. This one's a cracker, but I can't see Wellington Olympic losing to Auckland City FC.
Yeah, look, in previous years, this is a mouth-watering clash. This year, I think Wellington Olympic are 3-3, top of the table. Auckland City have only had two matches played, just struggling a little bit to reach the same heights as previous years. They're only one win outside the top two, but I can see Wellington Olympic winning this. I actually bumped into them at Christchurch Airport last weekend on their way down to play in the Garden City, and that squad is just absolutely stacked of really, really experienced National League players, and I think Wellington Olympic will be too strong for Auckland City today. In the clash between Auckland FC Reserves and Coastal Spirit, I think Auckland FC Reserves will get a win in that one at home, and I think the game of the round for me is that Christchurch United versus Western Springs game. That's third versus fourth. How do you see that one going, Eamon?
I'm going to go for a Christchurch United win.
I've got them ticked on my side as well. I just think they might have a little bit too much at home for Western Springs, but I could see that one even finishing as a draw, but I've tried to tip winners only in the National League men this week. So I've gone Christchurch United as well to beat Western Springs. I'm picking Phoenix Reserves away from home to beat Auckland United. I just think that Phoenix Reserve side, for the benefit of training with the men's first team, I think they're going quite well there. And Birkenhead United to continue their unbeaten run away down in the capital against Western Suburbs tomorrow afternoon.
And then we move on to the National Women's League starting Saturday. Batoni versus Southern United on Sunday. We have Central Football versus Western Springs, Eastern Suburbs versus Canterbury United. This one's a good, we've got a couple of good, these last two ones are fantastic. Phoenix Reserves versus Auckland United, West Coast Rangers versus Wellington United.
Yeah, let's start today with the Petone Southern United game. Southern are a bit of a smoky in this competition. They're up in fourth, and I think they'll beat Petone, newcomers to the National League Women. So I'm tipping the Southern team to win that one today. When we move to tomorrow, I'm tending to lean towards the Northern League teams, the Auckland teams, so I can see Eastern Suburbs beating Canterbury United. I can see Western Springs making light work of Central Football. I think they went down 10-0 last weekend against Auckland United. Just too tough for the regional sides to bring the players from individual clubs together under one umbrella in a short space of time. So Springs to win that one comfortably and stay top of the league. Phoenix Reserves versus Auckland United is a repeat of the Kate Shepherd Cup final from last month, where Auckland United won that one comfortably. I think they'll get over their jet lag that they had from coming back from China, and I think they'll be too strong for the Phoenix Reserves in that one, and they'll maintain their position in second spot. And that other game, you're right, West Coast Rangers and Wellington United is a mouth-watering one, but I can see West Coast Rangers, who won the Northern League, being too strong for Wellington United in that game.
Absolutely. We move on to our EPL, our ever-popular EPL picks, and we kick it off Nottingham Forest, Woods East team versus Chelsea, and that's the first game. The next two, we've got a number of Saturday matches. The next two are Sunderland versus Wolves, Burnley versus Leeds. So we start off with that Forest-Chelsea match. Much as I want to see Woodsy get back on target in the goals, I just see Chelsea too good.
Yeah, it's unfortunate for Ange Postecoglou. If we look at his form last year, he seems to like these positions 16, 17, 18, doesn't he? He was right down the bottom there with Spurs. And Nottingham Forest this year find themselves in 17th going into this match. I've tipped Chelsea at the start of the season as one of the contenders for the title. They're sitting in 7th place, and I think they'll be too strong and heap even more pressure on Big Ange Postecoglou at Nottingham Forest. They could be a side that have two managers in one season at the rate they're going. I just can't see anything happening there for Ange. And, you talk about giving managers time. I just don't know whether he's got the time with this owner, but we'll wait and see how that one goes. In terms of Brighton-Newcastle, that's 12th versus 11th. For me, that's a draw on paper. And Burnley, who are in the relegation zone up against Leeds, I'm picking Leeds.
Yep.
Two teams that came up from the Championship. I think the team from Yorkshire just has the advantage over the team from Burnley.
And Sunderland-Wolves, what do you reckon?
Sunderland Wolves, I think it will go the way of Sunderland.
Yep. Look,
Wolves,
I've got
Wolves
that on my
relegation
list
trouble as well, and I just can't see that one going any other way than the Stadium of Light team.
Yeah, I've picked Brighton and Newcastle in a draw. So the final two matches are Man City versus Everton, Fulham versus Arsenal for Saturday, Sunday morning.
Man City versus Everton game is a really interesting one. I like the look of Everton, but I just think Man City will be too strong for that one. Arsenal top of the league, top of the table at the moment. They'll be too strong for Fulham. And we might have overlooked the Palace versus Bournemouth game, which is a big one. That's fourth versus sixth. Bill Foley's side, Bournemouth, flying high at the moment in one of the Champions League positions. And I'm going to tip them to beat Crystal Palace at home as well and continue that winning run.
Yep, I've actually put up Palace on my list here. Yeah, and Fulham Arsenal. I think they're top of the league now. But this one's a tough one. I see nothing but a one-all draw here, Seamus.
These London derbies, they can be really, really big arm wrestles, can't they? So, look, I could see that one happening that way. Fulham are a difficult side to play in the Premier League. They've consolidated their position over the last couple of seasons. But, look, I think if it's going to be Arsenal's year this year and they're going to finally lift the trophy after a long absence, they've got to win games like this on paper against teams that really they should be beating. So if they trip up against Fulham, then I dare say that their title credentials will take a little bit of a hit for me.
Okay, we have West Ham. Oh, no. Do I have to?
They're going
to
be happy with me this week.
Yeah, well, I've got to bring something else up. Liverpool versus Man United. Now, we can talk about that next week, but no, let's get it off your chest. How much do you reckon you're going to beat us by?
Look, I think it'll be closer than you think. This Liverpool side, for all of the big signings, for all of the multi-million dollar deals that went through in the off-season, they just haven't seemed to click yet, have they? And I think that shows how important, you know, a settled squad can be. You know, it's one thing to bring these big names in, but, you know, if you've got a settled squad like Slot picked up last year off the back of Klopp's hard work, it just makes it a little bit easier. You know, I see Liverpool winning. I don't see Liverpool dropping points against Manchester United, but I don't think we're going to see a huge scoreline like we've seen in previous years. So, look, I'm going to tip Liverpool to win, but I'm not going to kick a wounded dog while it's down. I'm not going to say it's going to be a 4-0. I think a 1-0 win is enough for Liverpool to take 3 points against their arch rivals, Manchester United. But the West Ham fans that are listening will be happy with me today.
I'm backing them.
Despite them being one place above the foot of the table in 19th, they're up against another team that I think are going to be staring down the barrel of a relegation fight in Brentford. And I think West Ham are going to have enough here with a new manager coming in. They're going to have enough to roll over the bees. I think West Ham start to win and maybe start their climb out of the relegation zone this weekend.
Yeah, I think West Ham fans will now praise you, Seamus, though they will now, you'll have a lot of people. Well, I think the West Ham fans were all agreeing with you, you know, it wasn't at the start they won it, but I think getting Nuno there, and who knows who they may get in January. That's all I'm going to say, because if Ange, if you don't use him properly, he's heading down to London. And I can imagine a whole lot of West Ham fans that in the past have said, "Oh no, he's not that good," would be praising him. And I won't mention his name.
Well, let's not forget those West Ham fans were praising another former All Whites captain not so long ago as well. So there's a bit of a history with the Hammers and New Zealand players. So we might see another one there in the future. And of course, one more game as well that we've forgotten. It's Tottenham Hotspur versus Aston Villa. Look, I think Spurs under their new manager are flying at the moment up in third, and I'll see them continue at the end of this weekend to be in that conversation for European Champions League places next year.
I tell you what, mate, I'm having one of those days. I must be having, you know, I've turned into the Devin Conway in 2020.
Well, look, hey, I didn't help you by a couple of those phone calls going through to the keeper as well when you're trying to get hold
well,
of me.
Well, I was thinking, no, and family comes first, Seamus, and say good day to your mum. Hello, Mrs. Martin. How are you going? You got a good son there. He's not bad. When he answers the phone.
Look, it's a good thing, and look, I'm feeling very very refreshed after that couple of weekends away, and looking forward to a long night tonight. 9:30 kickoff for Auckland FC versus Melbourne Victory, and then 11:45 for Perth Glory versus Wellington Phoenix. So, look, I'll probably take in the first one. The second one, it might be a record and watch in the morning situation.
Well, I've got to go to a 50th tonight. I've been invited, surprisingly, to parties, and so I'm, you know, whether they have the TV on and music playing, it doesn't worry me. I'll be keeping an eye on it.
Well, look, I've been invited to the Waikato Bay of Plenty Football 25 Year Anniversary Awards dinner tonight. So,
are you going to be the keynote speaker?
I'm helping present a couple of awards. Yeah, it's going to be good, but a nice way to celebrate 25 years of football down in this region.
Absolutely.
And they've timed final whistle for 9:30 to coincide with the kickoff of the Auckland FC match. So it's on me to make sure that we reach that target. So I can't do too much waffling like I do on this show every week.
Yeah, well, don't have me as your co-host as you think, but just saying, you know, there's a great history between Bay of Plenty and Waikato United that won Chatham Cups, the great Mount Maunganui team. So, yeah, it should be a good night. Seamus, you have a fantastic weekend.
Thanks very much. You too. Get out there and enjoy some football.
Cheers. That was Seamus Martin. Absolutely fantastic. And I have to say, I always enjoy his comments. So next up we're going to have Garth Galloway, as I'll just put on a bit of music and I'll get to Garth. And of course, Garth's a Liverpool supporter, so it doesn't make it any better. Weekender on Planet FM, and just some quick message from our sponsors. Weekend mission sorted, mate. Wash the car, rinse the boats, clean the bait station, keep the wife's tomatoes happy, all with a water smart tank. No water restrictions, no worries, different sizes to suit your property. Check out watersmart.co.nz and take control today. We're going to talk a bit of cricket, and here to join us, as he always joins us, and he's going to be joining us hopefully when he's available through the summer, our renowned cricket commentator Garth Galloway. Good morning to you, sir.
Hello, Eamon. How are you, mate?
Oh, listen, mate, I'm good, but I'm looking forward to the match tonight. I'm looking forward to the action. While I enjoy 2020 cricket, I'm looking forward to the one-day internationals more ahead with England here. But I look at this New Zealand side. Mitch Santner's back, Ravindra's back. But I look at this English side. You've got Harry Brook, the captain, Josh Butler, Sam Curran, Cass, who's a very, very good bowler. This is going to be a superb series.
Yeah, I think it'll be a lot of fun. And England have played three other bilateral series over here, Eamon. They've won all of them. So it poses a good challenge for New Zealand. The World Cup coming up, of course, for T20 cricket in March next year in India and in Sri Lanka. And you know, the opportunities for the players, you know, few and far between really now. So these are important games in terms of both sides, both squads looking to select and their sides for the World Cup. And really, you know, this England side is an exciting one. You mentioned the New Zealand players. England, I think, their top order with Butler, Salt, who I think is a superstar of T20 cricket, Bethell and Brook, all of them, you know, with strike rates of over 148, up around 150, and Salt's is 170. You know, they will be, it'll be a challenge for the New Zealand bowling attack. And then, interestingly, I do like the look of the New Zealand attack. I feel England are perhaps just a little bit weak in terms of the bowling. They don't have the experience that New Zealand does. Luke Wood only playing 11 games. Liam Dawson, the spinner, 18, and Bryden Carr's just 11. So they'll be relying on the experience of Sam Curran and Adil Rashid, their right-arm leg spinner, who's played a vast amount of T20 cricket. I think it'll be a really interesting series, and I think New Zealand will be put under a lot of pressure.
I think they will be put under a lot of pressure. I think, you know, they've really got to have consistency in there. When I look at this New Zealand squad and I, you know, I still fear that, you know, I still fear that we are missing some key components in there. Like, you have a look at it, like you've got Devin Conway. Devin Conway's gone, but how will Robinson go against them? You know, Chapman really needs to fire in the series. It's great to have Seifert back, but we're going to be tested. And of course, then when I look at our bowling stocks, you know, like, I feel that Kyle Jameson really has to put in a good shift at bowling.
Yeah, look, I agree. I mean, I think Seifert, I think, has become, you know, rapidly become a key part of this New Zealand side. His keeping has been good. I think his batting's improved a lot. You know, he's now averaging nearly 30, a strike rate of 142. So he's the best of the performers in terms of that balance between strike rate and average. I think you're right to touch on Chapman. You know, struggling in his last few series. Experience with 93 matches, averages 25, but again, a player who will be feeling vulnerable with Allen and Williamson likely to come back. You know, there's pressure for places, which I think is good. Ravindra, of course. Yeah. Let's talk about him quickly. 30 T20 games, averages just 20, a strike rate of 136. So while he sprinkles the lovely you know, magic dust in the 50-over cricket, and of course he's played some very good test innings, still yet to be proven, I think, at T20 at international level. So the New Zealand, the batting does feel for me a little bit vulnerable. And the tail feels quite long when you start to look at Bracewell batting at 6, Neesham 7, Santner 8, and then Jameson, Henry, and Duffy. But against that, I think you've got, you know, not the strongest of English bowling attacks, as I said. They've gone in with just 3 seamers, and they have the potential. They've got 2 spinners, you know, frontline ones in Dawson and Rashid, and then Bethell, who can bowl a few overs. So, you know, they're putting their eggs in a pretty small basket, England, in terms of their attack. You're right about Kyle Jameson, I think, Eamon. Again, relatively inexperienced, the least experienced of the New Zealand attack. 16 matches, an average of 37 per wicket, and again, the economy rate higher than any of the other New Zealand bowlers at 9.23. So, you know, again, a player who is looking to establish himself in this form of the game. He's alongside, of course, Duffy, now the 5th ranked T20 bowler in the world. And you'll remember not so long ago, he was number one. His record's incredible, 41 wickets at 16 and an economy rate of 7.17. And you've got the very well-performed Matt Henry as well. And, of course, the vastly experienced, terrific bowler and captain in Mitchell Santner coming back after some stomach surgery. 114 matches, 124 wickets at 22 and an average of 7.06 per over. Fantastic figures. So I feel that the New Zealand attack has the edge with a little bit of vulnerability around Jameson, but the England batting, that top four, if they get away, and bear in mind their last game was against South Africa in Manchester on the 12th of September, they scored 304 for 2 that day. You know, the third highest total in T20 international cricket, and that's behind Nepal against Mongolia and Zimbabwe against Gambia. So the highest score by proper sides, you might say.
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, just one thing, the White Ferns. Obviously, last time we spoke, they lost to Australia. They lost to South Africa, which we thought they probably would win. They had a win against Bangladesh, another good innings by Sophie Devine, but against Sri Lanka, the game was rained off and they were chasing 259, which I thought was a very tough chase for them. And then they've got a must win tonight against Pakistan, followed by India and England.
Yeah, and I think, I said to you a week ago, I thought they would beat South Africa comfortably. South Africa bowled out for just 70 against England. And what a performance they put together to come back. Another one of those performances where I think New Zealand, as they've been wont to do over many years, crumbled under pressure. And as I said to you this time a week ago, you know, they're not getting enough out of Bates. They need runs from her, 29 runs from three innings, including two ducks. Plimmer, yet to really get going. Devine, extraordinary, really, her tournament so far, the second leading run scorer in the tournament. Absolutely fabulous, but she simply hasn't had enough support. The bowlers have been respectable. Pakistan just starting to come into their own, Eamon. They were unlucky to be rained off against England when they were very much on top. I think they would have won that game. And I think New Zealand probably would have lost to Sri Lanka if they hadn't been rained off. That was, as you said, a very difficult task. So, again, the money would tell you, the head would tell you that, and the heart, that New Zealand should beat Pakistan. But Pakistan's performance against England, rain curtailed, was a very good one indeed. And I think, you know, if New Zealand get through it, and if they don't, then they're out of the tournament, really, I think. And then they've got to beat England and India as well. So very tough ask. And, unfortunately, they only have themselves to blame. They get into these difficult situations through poor performances early in the tournament.
Yeah, they do. And you know something, we've heard such big talk from the White Ferns. And, you know, I think women's cricket is actually a really good product. I think I've watched some of those matches in the World Cup and they've been brilliant to watch. But I don't know what it is, whether this side is ageing, because a lot of the experienced players haven't really come to the fore. I don't like calling it out, but I think Susie Bates hasn't really performed. Sophie Devine has been brilliant. Meili Kerr, we hope that she can produce something, but it seems as though that we need to start bringing in some younger players.
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, I think if you look at Susie's figures, and she has, you know, she started playing for New Zealand in 2006, so nearly 20 years ago. It's been a hell of a career. She's one of the greats for New Zealand, unquestionably. But as I've said to you before, the last couple of years haven't been particularly kind to her. 2024, she played 11 matches at an average of 22. This year, she's played 7 and is averaging 17. You know, those aren't figures that should see a player being picked time and time again. And I think, you know, you start to think, well, unless she's going to score runs in the rest of this tournament and get New Zealand into winning positions, I think you have to question the future of Susie Bates.
And I'll say this, she's been a great servant of New Zealand cricket.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely. She's been brilliant. And she's been a brilliant ambassador for New Zealand, for the women's game here in New Zealand. But there's a number of players now that must, you know, this is their last rodeo. They will probably, you know, retire after this. And, you know, I think this New Zealand women's cricket side, the White Ferns, they need to start looking at our younger players and also exposing them to place, maybe letting them have the opportunity to play in the women's Big Bash in Australia.
Yeah, I mean, they brought through players like Bree Ealing, who has been a little bit expensive but is picking up wickets. And I think she looks like a really good prospect for the future. Tahuhu, I think, has bowled well in the tournament. Jess Kerr has been respectable. Actually, the player who has not shone yet, and it is costing New Zealand because she's such a fine player, is Meili Kerr.
Yeah.
Who's batting and wicket-taking sees her, you know, down in the middle of the stats, really, for the tournament. You'd always expect to see her with both bat and ball towards the top of the statistics. So, So Amelia Kerr and Susie Bates, if New Zealand are to get through, they need to draw some strong performances out of them. Gaze will need to get runs. She was very good in the build-up. Got an excellent 100 in that, and you know, she is a good striker of the ball, but again, you know, the performances by players like Green, Plummer and co has just not been compelling enough. One player we should mention who I think has done very well is Brooke Halliday. You know, a middle order player of some status now, a good striker of the ball, one of the few women players to play the reverse sweep and things in a compelling way. And, you know, she's been impressive. I've enjoyed watching her. As you say, I mean, I watch all the highlights of the women's game. I love watching it. I think the skill levels are comparable to the men, and certainly getting better and better. And there are more good players around, if that makes sense. So, and I think New Zealand will have to, after this World Cup, I would like to think that New Zealand they might just have to put up with a bit of pain over a period of years with some younger players and bring them through and make them experience. The big thing that they have to focus on, I think, and the thing that has been wanting in the previous is culture. And so, you know, very important indeed that the side moving into the future has a good, strong culture.
Absolutely. Well, Garth, I am going to call it there. You have a wonderful weekend. Hopefully we can chat next week and I'll be in touch during the week. I know you've got a big call today with Sports Nation.
Yeah, that should be good. They're looking forward to it with Chris Harris and Dev Hockney. It'll be good fun.
It will be good fun. And when's Mr. Coney back on? Back in the driver's seat?
Oh, I think we drag him out of Picton for the first West Indies test in early December down here in Christchurch, and then we head off to Wellington and Mount Maunganui, it'll be good. We'll get his vocal cords nice and loosened. He's had a hip replacement, Dan Smith, so they're all moving well.
Oh, goodness gracious. No wonder the youngies don't want to be part of the commentary team. They're all breaking themselves.
Fingers crossed, eh?
Well, you're one of the youngies, and probably Harris is one of the youngies, so even Harris will probably, you know, when he gets the invitation, probably thinks, God, do I really want to be part of this team?
That's right. You've got bone on bone, mate, bone on bone.
No, but hey, and hopefully, and Deb Hockley, she's a very good cricket commentator as well, too.
Lovely human being, great person, Deb.
Good sort, Hey, have a good weekend, Garth, and we didn't speak, and I'm getting out before you put off Manchester United 1, Liverpool 0. Goodbye, Mr. Galloway. Got him. Okay, so next up we'll get Piper and Lashes on.
Just because we get around.
Talking about my generation.
Things they do look awful.
Talking about my generation.
I hope I die before I get old.
Talking about my generation.
To my generation, baby. Why don't you all fade away? Don't try and dig what we all say. A big sensation. I'm just talking about my generation. What we all
say.
I'm trying to cause a big sensation. Just talking about my generation.
My generation, baby.
My generation. People try.
get around. Before I get old,
welcome everyone back to the Sports Weekender, where we come to the final part of the show, and thank everyone that has listened. Apology about what happened in the rugby league segment. Looks like there was a bit of a communications breakdown, but that happens on a live show. Here to join us on line one is a good young broadcaster, and he had the misfortune of working under our next panelist, Sam Lashes Casey. Good morning to you, Lashes.
Good morning to you, mate. How are you getting on?
Yeah, good.
Saturday morning here in Auckland after a great Otago win. Things are all hunky-dory on my
end,
mate.
Yeah, well, wait till next week, mate. Wait till next week when you go to the motherland. Anyway, unfortunately, I've got your former boss, so no doubt he'll try and push you around like he used to do in the studio in Dunedin. The mouth of the South, Lee Piper, good morning.
Well, how do we know we're going to the motherland next week? We could be coming back to the to Forsyth Bar. I wouldn't rule out Hawke's Bay.
Ooh. Yeah, well, I tell you what, you couldn't go to Christchurch because you've been so rude to Cantabrians in the past couple of weeks on this show.
Yeah, well, I know, yeah. I think really that Christchurch should be like the Vatican. Just build a wall around it. They don't want to get out. People don't want to get in. And that suits everyone.
Okay, we're going to kick it off with you, Piper. Netball. Australia 69, New Zealand 52. Blown away in that fourth quarter, weren't they, Lee?
Yeah, they were. I unfortunately, there's kind of a no-win here for... well, there is a win, I guess, if they could... You know, retain the Constellation Cup, I guess it would ease the pressure. But if they were to get whopped 4-0, and it was a really collapse towards the end there, wasn't it? Because they were in it at half time. They were kind of in it. You could see the slippage in that third quarter, but they got just destroyed in the fourth quarter. So if they get beaten 4-0, the drums will just be beyond beating. Unfortunately for also the netball this week, there's been no rugby. There's been no All Blacks. They don't go into camp till next week. They don't play for a couple of weeks. And so, you know, that's been the focus. And, you know, as we've talked about on this show before, if you listed the 10 don't do's to run sport, they would tick everyone. So, yeah, probably no surprise, really, to see. And what we are seeing, and that's why, ironically, the likes of Berger and Kelly Jackson and Maddie Gordon, Tobias Selby-Rickett, heading to Australia, albeit that she's not playing. But a lot of our better players playing in that league, week after week, that'll actually help at a Ferns level.
I think it will too. Just some of your thoughts on that, Lashes. You probably didn't, because you've had a busy couple of weeks, because you've been on everyone's show on the other station in Parnell.
Yeah, no, I've talked a lot about it, to be fair, with Piper as well, about this netball fiasco. And, I mean, that was worst-case scenario last night. They were right in that game. And then, Jesus, like Lee said, they just went to sleep and ended up being an absolute hiding. So, very, very disappointing. I think they need to at least retain the Constellation Cup. If they can win it outright, that would be great. But if they don't, if they continue to get spanked, like Lee said, the noise won't go away and the knives will be well and truly out, that is for sure. So, look, it's a shame that it's continuing to drag on, but such is the nature of professional sport. Everyone wants to have their say, and not everyone's happy with the other person's opinion, so no doubt it'll drag on even more. But the lack of leadership has been absolutely glaringly obvious, and I think that'll be the biggest thing to come out of it. You know, that the leadership and those in charge, there'll be changes at the top, and whoever comes in will have a hell of a mess to clean up.
Absolutely, and of course, Lashes, you've got a big day ahead of you, a lot of racing. Now, anyone that, you know, we've got the Everest, we've got the Caulfield, we've got the Livermore at Ellerslie, but, and if you're betting, bet responsible, R18, but I'm looking at the Everest, and of course, Kim Yin Rising is the big favourites, but I like Jolly Star and War Machine in this Everest, Lashes.
Yeah, well, fair enough too, you know, some good Kiwi connections there with Cambridge Stud and James McDonald involved with Jolly Star, and War Machine owned by former All Black coach John Hart. It was bought out of New Zealand and given to train in Australia. And look, and they're great chances, and the money's really come for War Machine, $21 into $9.50. But look, to be honest, we just had David Hayes, the trainer of Kar Yin Rising, on the mail run on Trackside about an hour ago. and he couldn't wipe the smile off his face. He was that confident. He thought $1.95 was superb money and won't be surprised to see it close at around $1.50. He thought you'd just take that and laugh. However, it is the toughest field the Hong Kong superstar has faced in a while, and if he was to get beaten, I don't mind the chances of Chris Waller and Lady Shenandoah at $13.320, I think.
And, yep, and... And of course, if you're betting, bet responsible, R18. I have to say the slashes. So
yeah, no, for sure. Always gamble responsibly. But Lady Shenandoah, forgive last star. She's back to Randwick, back on the right leg, and she has serious gears. And if the gap's open at the right time for her, Ka Ying Rising will know she's there, that's for sure.
And of course, you know, if probably something that's really fallen under the radar is the Caulfield. And of course, Hall's Yours is a big favourite in that, but I like Royal Supremacy in this one.
Yeah, no, and you've got every reason to as well. We had Kira Mars 2IC, Jack Turnbull on the mail run this morning, and he was very bullish around Royal Supremacy, as well as the stablemate Middle Earth. So you shop around those two and the Caulfield Cup. I mean, this used to be Caulfield Cup Day, so the Everest has taken over the shiny new toy and made the Caulfield Cup second fiddle, but it is still one of Australia's great races. And, yeah, the Kiramar Barn are confident in Middle Earth and Royal Supremacy, either one of those, both at good odds to roll the favourite.
Mash, what's the rumour around, or not rumour, it might be fact, I was actually talking to a few lads last night about racing in New Zealand and Chris Waller wanting to get involved and Delandis wanting to get involved as well to try and help the New Zealand racing industry, because as you point out, you know, they've got Everest and Caulfield Cup on the same day. We're leading into the Melbourne Cup, but the racing over there at the moment is superb. They've got, you know, I think today's sold out for the Everest. You can't get a ticket for love nor money. They seem to be going ahead in leaps and bounds in regards to their racing calendar and the riches, and we just seem to be falling further apart. What's the rumour around New Zealand racing and how to get it out of their current situation?
Yeah, no, you're right there around Chris Waller and some of the high powers that be over in Australia wanting to get involved because they see the potential here, Lee. Like, it's a rugby racing in their country, as you well know, and for too long it's just sort of treaded water and all gone backwards. We've got this new investment through Entain, and now, you know, that's just an infrastructure issue. The tracks don't seem to be up to scratch. We're getting abandonments left, right and centre. And, you know, and you've got so many stakeholders across the board relying on these races being run. You just can't have that. It makes it a Mickey Mouse operation. So whether or not Waller and co want to come in and centralise it and make them, you know, minimise the racetracks and have good quality infrastructure and places to go to the races will be a big step forward. But in saying that, you know, Cup Week still flies massively. Karaka Million Night is an awesome night. They added NZB Kiwi Night in early March last year, which was a raging success. So the foundations are there, but it's got to get more consistent in what they're outputting and what they're delivering and give stakeholders across the industry more confidence. And I think, you know, some changes to infrastructure and maybe, look, as sad as it is, getting rid of some of these smaller race courses where volunteers are trying their best to do jobs isn't the way forward, and it needs to be a little bit more centralised around where the horse populations are and get a little bit more consistency and performance, and that will reflect in the turnover continuing to go up. But look, it's been a difficult time, and of course weather gods and certain things outside of your control come into it. But that being said, though, Lee, there is a great foundation there, and Chris Waller being the expat Kiwi, and he's a smart man and has seen it, the turnaround of Sydney racing, and he wants to, yeah, as you say, come in and help with New Zealand, because it's definitely a, I guess, an itch worth scratching, that's for sure.
Just on that, Lashes and Lee, yep, I probably would be good. I just hope we don't get rid of the country meetings, because they're a lot of fun, those country meetings. We've all been to them. It's a good old LARP. You bring tour groups. You have a lot of groups that go up. I'm looking to go up to Ruakaka this summer to some of the meetings there. So I hope so. Hey, just while we're here, MPC, and of course, The mob from Dunedin, which is probably this, show me a Dunediner in that side, because they're all students down for university. They bet by a plenty. They were pretty good, this Otago side. I have to give it to them. I look at that. Christian Leo Willie, fantastic. Lucas Casey, a superstar. But Jonah Nariki, I think, has been brilliant. And of course, Dylan Pledger. Anyway, I'm going to start off with you, Piper, because, you know, you'll be eating your words in a couple of weeks' time when the Red and Blacks beat you.
Well, I think what was good about all of that was that you know, just a tick under 11,000 there last night. Students flocked in late, $10 tickets. So Targa Rugby actually doing something useful, which is, you know, kind of setting prices at everyone's $20, I think, for if they open up more stands. But as you'd have seen on TV, the main stand, the Spate stand, the South stand was absolutely chocker. And awesome to see, like, for the members up in the members' lounges, just a real buzz. I was actually talking to Chris Hart, who last knows well. We were talking about that he had a bigger Targa jersey on before the game. Targa Sports Tech, I just sold out of Otago gear yesterday. So, you know, you got to remember, they haven't been in a final for, you know, for near 20 years. Just through the way that the competition ended up. But this year, if they would have managed to win the NPC, this would go down, I think, as the greatest Otago side and greatest Otago year. To hold the NPC, the Ranfurly Shield, the Colling Memorial against Auckland, the Donald Stewart, the Stewart Memorial, like they've won every single trophy that was on offer. I don't think you could beat it. But to their performance, you know, it was world class. I don't want to bark on too much about our pledger, but the moment he came into that side and really stepped it up, you know, you can just see the speed in which they're playing. They are helped by playing under the roof for sure, but Cam Miller last night, I think that's probably the best game I've seen. Mm-hmm. He introduced his running game. You saw him set up that try for pledger. He burst through some gaps. You know, that's been the part of his game that's been missing. You know, brilliant goal kicker, like, you know, 97%, just, you know, you bet responsibly. You wouldn't bet responsibly there. You'd be all over him like a rash. He's that good. But his running game last night was, you know, was really good, and that added a dimension. Gilbert's good under the high ball. You mentioned the Riki. So they've got it going well. And, you know, Christian Leo Willey, he could carry a tank and still make darts going forward. You know, you've seen the development of Lucas Casey. They just blew Bay of Plenty away. And I thought going into the final series that Bay of Plenty were probably up there as, if not the favourite, certainly in the mix. And you saw in the first 20 minutes their strike power, but they just couldn't dominate. They didn't get enough front four ball, and Otago just punished them for every mistake. So they're a big shot next week, whether they're in Canterbury or playing at home. You know, they've beaten Canterbury in Canterbury once. Canterbury struggled last week against Counties, had to go to a 100-minute game. That's why I wouldn't rule out Hawke's Bay. That's a big slog for Canterbury last week. So, you know, lots to like about the Otago side, and I think pretty much everybody's hoping that they can get the job done.
Lashes, just some of your thoughts on that. Obviously being a Dunedin night with the other person on the line, but I've got to say, you know, I think this Otago side, I've got to give them credit, they've been fantastic to watch, and maybe if they were to host the final, you could be potentially talking 15 to 20,000 there, but who knows?
Yeah. Without a doubt, they'd get 15 to 20,000 there for a final, as we said. You know, Ranfurly Shield holders as well will go down as their best season of all time. I mean, I'm not a big Otago man by any stretch of the imagination, but I tell you what I am, and that's
what
Dylan
Piper
pledger,
said
man.
Too, yeah. Don't worry.
Yeah. No, I mean, this pledger is just some footballer. He's actually a pleasure to watch the way he's up the tempo of this side, and everyone's playing off the back of that. He's, every decision he makes is not on the right one, and this is a side that just keeps on winning, and I'm with Lee. Canterbury, they won the Ranfurly Shield. They had a lucky escape against Tasman. They lost the Shield, which took the wind out of their sails against Otago. They went to Northland and scraped home in extra time. They come back, they had a decent enough win over the Nacky, and then I just think they're running out of gas a little bit, and that might have been reflective in their performance against County. So the day will smell a bit of blood on the water, and the ambush will be on, and then we might get the 15 to 20,000 under the roof with the Maggies after a good win. But look, I think the neutral, to be honest, I think the neutral would love an Otago-Canterbury final and see that occasion. There'll be thousands that travel up the M1 to go and watch that one. But look, I'm just really excited for this game tonight and to see who Otago will be playing, because the brand of footy Otago are playing at the moment is very, very good to watch.
Well, I was
just tell you on that, lads, I was talking to Jake last night, Jamie Joe, and he rates Pledger ahead of Aaron Smith at the same stage. So at the same stage of the career, he just thinks that he brings a bit more than Smith. But that's how much they rate him. And so no surprise he didn't put him in that New Zealand or All Black 15. I mean, that word was out last week that he wasn't going to do that. He's had a big season. He's gone to Italy and South Africa with the 20s. He's played a full NPC. I think they're just waiting to give him a decent rest. You know, you've only got November, December. They start training for Super Rugby in December, and so he'll hit the ground running. But make no doubt of where New Zealand rugby and his Highlanders and coach sees him. He is a star in the making.
I'll say this here. I think he's a bolter for 2027. And you've heard it first, guys. So anyone ever
he's
heard
not a bolter,
it?
Mate. He's not a bolter. He's not a bolter. He's
in seat 1A.
He is absolutely.
Well, for 2027, 1A. The World Cup.
100%. 100%. You look at Roygaard, I would say.
Roygaard will be there.
Well, who's next?
Actually, I suppose looking at Pledger, the way he plays, he is very much like the Aaron Smith. Yeah, I'm going
to. Not only that, but he's different. He's different than Roygaard. So they bring two different styles to it. Roygaard's probably a bit more snappy and a bit more kind of, not snappy, but he's bigger and he's a bit more robust. But Pledger, in terms of speed and upping the tempo of the game with 25 to go, like, he's the guy.
Perfect.
So. He's not a bolter. He is absolutely, to Lash's point, in seat 1A.
Absolutely. Well, okay, I've been corrected here by a couple of blokes from Dunedin. Yeah, you guys must be loving it. Hey, talking about cricket tonight, but the cricket has been played in Christchurch the same time as the MPC match at Apollo Project Stadium. And to be quite honest with you, I probably got myself in a bit of crap with the Cantabrians because I said they're just like Aucklanders. They don't turn up to a game. They weren't going to turn up. I'm looking forward more to the cricket than I am the rugby tonight. Hello? Someone?
You're probably well within your rights to say that, to be fair. I mean, it's not often we get England here, even though it is T20 cricket and anything can happen, and they've obviously got one eye on the Ashes, and Brendan McCullum's taken the team down to Queenstown for 4 days of golf, so they might not be taking it that seriously, the old Black Caps. But the scheduling clash is certainly a real shame, and obviously the NPC and the NZR, whoever, weren't that keen to play that Canterbury game at 4:30, or maybe get their heads together and do a dual ticket type option. I'm not sure. So that is a shame. But hey, with the races going on, the rugby and the cricket, that remote's going to be burning because we'll be changing the channels all the time.
Absolutely. What do you reckon, Piper? You reckon we're going to beat the mop up the Poms in the 2020s?
Oh, don't take this the wrong way, but I don't really care. I think the problem is that we're kind of. The T20s is too much saturation for me, and while it's good in a World Cup, it loses its space for me. If we were playing them in a Test match, that's a whole different kettle of fish, but I'm probably a bit of a cricket tragic and like the Test match and the nuances of a five-day game, and I can live with one-day cricket, but 2020 is still a little hit and miss for me. And to Lash's point, I don't think England are going to sweat if they lose, because their eye is definitely on the... You know, on the Ashes.
But again, the
problem we've got, I reckon, is our Christmas schedule. So, you know, we shut down for Christmas around the 20th and we don't come back till the 10th or 11th. There's no decent international cricket on. So there's nothing to go and watch. I think we'll probably, isn't Bangladesh out for the 98th time or Sri Lanka comes out? Like, you know, we just.
Now, we've got the West Indies are the new project now, Piper.
Yeah, but they can't beat anybody. Like they'd be lucky to beat North East Valley down at the Oval. Like they're a poor side. They're not holding Garner, Malcolm Marshall. You know, they're not that. They're not even Chanderpaul, really, although his son's playing the team. They're poor. They're just poor. And so we're starved of really great cricket, and we're starved of Test match cricket. And that's a shame, I think. So, yeah, while it will be of interest, and obviously the game's sold out, I think, at Hagley tonight, which is a reflection on the Canterbury NPC side. For me, it just doesn't hold as much kind of sway. I'll watch it for entertainment value, but I certainly, probably won't actually. I'll probably watch the Canterbury Hawke's Bay game unless Canterbury get well ahead and then, like, you know, as I normally will do, I abandon that. I'll probably watch the rugby first and foremost. Not that I don't care, but I care, but not that much.
Okay, we'll sign it off here, boys. Rugby league, Kiwis versus Samoa. I looked at the Samoan side. Jeez, it's a scary side. International rugby league, it is the way that it is. A lot of these players can play state of origin, can play for their Pacific origins. I think it's going to be a fantastic match. Lashes.
Yeah, I think you're dead right, mate. And first and foremost, that origin eligibility has to be changed. It's just an absolute disgrace that it's not. It certainly affects us Kiwis, but the Tongans and the Samoans have absolutely stacked sides. And look, if we had Jerome Hughes, I'd be more than confident. But look, Mount Smart would probably be a nigh on away game for us Kiwis. And I know we're favourites, but a lot of people think it'll be a failure if we don't win this Pacific Championships. But I think the calibre of the two Pacific sides are as such that certainly there'll be no stain on us if we are to get beaten. But look, the way I see it, I think it's a it's a game that needs to be won up front, and we can do that with the likes of Fisher Harris and Joseph Carpenter. They've been in great form for their club sides. And then guys like Kieran Foran and Dylan Brown can hopefully find some form in the halves and steer us around and put us in the right areas and play off the back of that. The forecast is meant to be not too bad, so hopefully the Kiwis can scrape home, because that Tongan game, it's Eden Park, I think it is, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, least favourite venue. Yeah.
Absolute shithole.
Yeah, hi Nick, how you going?
I'm with Lash, I think they've got to take the passion out of the Kiwis. If they score first and they get on top, they take the crowd out a little bit, it will be like an away game. I think they've just got a little bit much experience and a little bit much class. But if the Tongans and or the Samoans in this comp get their tails up, and we've seen this before, particularly with Tonga, that they can be very tough to beat. That's the sort of team they are, and I'm sure that, you know, the new coaching staff at the Kiwis will be hammering that point home, you know, like take every opportunity that you've got and bury them and kind of keep them under pressure, because that's when the Kiwis are at their best, and that's when we see that a little bit of the disjointedness of trying to bring teams together at the last moment. So I think that's
we'll call it.